Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Welcome, Earth Explorers. Brooks Agnew here, live. It's August 22nd, 2010, after 5 p.m. Pacific. You're live with us. We're coming to you live from Western North Carolina, and we're glad that you're here with us tonight. We have a couple of interesting things to share with you tonight. There's just some changes, some earth changes that are going on, different things that are really making things strange out there. And I want you to be aware of them. I want you to know what's going on. I want to talk a little bit about some politics tonight, so if you're not in the mood to hear that, you can just stay tuned in anyway, because you're going to like it. And we're glad that you're here with us. We're glad you're tuning in and getting squared here. This is where the past meets the future. We talk about the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth, and we have open lines tonight, so if you want to be with us and you're off-planet, you can reach us by getting to a cell phone tower at 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511. If you're west of Earth, you can reach us at 530-413-4515, and if you're east of Earth, then it's 530-413-4520. Lots of neat stuff. The solar wind is barely a breeze today, 261.4 kilometers per second. That's about the lowest that we've seen it in the last few years. There are no sunspots. Solar cycle 24 has never really gotten going yet. It's just a sunspot here and there. Nice to look at them through your coronoscope or going to the SDO website, but nothing to really write home about, nothing to really get solar scientists excited. We are learning about the solar jet stream and the way the coronal mass ejections work, but we're like high school students with our new toys. We haven't gathered enough data to make any predictions or determinations, and what is bad and what is worse with the sun. So we're just interested in it, and we try to report on it so that you have some perspective from week to week as you listen live or go to the archives. By the way, we've been a proud member of the BBS Radio Network since September of 2005, which is ancient history for Internet radio. BBS Radio is the most widely listened to Internet radio network in the world. And X Squared Radio is right up there at the top, number one, number two at BBS Radio. So X Squared Radio brings you advanced and sometimes pretty deep scientific talk radio with experts from all around the world in all kinds of subjects, from whale research to cosmology to UFOs to, different archaeological or anthropological questions about where we came from, why we're here, where we might be going, whether we're evolving or not. And we love to talk about that stuff. And if you've got some stuff you want to talk about in those areas tonight, you can certainly call in and we'll discuss it. For the seventh year in a row, an email is circulating the internet claiming that Mars will approach Earth and swell to the size of a full moon on August 27th. It's a historic event. It's also a hoax. Mars will be 314 million kilometers from Earth on August 27th, not in our neighborhood, but it will be shining in the western sunset sky like an ordinary red star of medium brightness. To see Mars as large as the full moon, I am afraid you'll have to board a spaceship. There were only 19 earthquakes in the last 24 hours. That's very low, about half what we've seen in weeks past. Only 5 of them were over 5.0, and none of them were over 6.0. The planet is quiet, just like the sun. Remember when you were a little boy or girl and you dreamed of being an astronaut? Well, you might want to instill those dreams in your kids again. Senior NASA officials are so eager to jumpstart advanced technology efforts that they sought and won congressional approval to devote $36.5 million in 2010 funding to 8 high-priority research projects. Those projects, which include joint efforts with the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, also known as DARPA, to investigate horizontal launch capabilities, in-orbit satellite servicing, and power beam propulsion, are set to begin immediately, said Robert Brown, NASA chief technologist. Now, there isn't huge money in working for NASA. Gotta be honest with you, most of the staff is young and highly motivated and hard about building their resumes. They will go out into private industry one day, some because of the relationships that they've built with NASA so that the companies they join can sell stuff to the agency, and some because they have learned lobbying techniques and working with Washington or working with various lobbyists that work with Congress to gain money for NASA, and some just because they're smart as a whip and they got to put their projects into space. Now, I'm no astronaut, but some of the technology that I helped develop is sitting on Mars right now, and it's kind of a neat little pin and a neat little paper. But it's still exciting, and it's still something that gives people hope. It gives them a target to shoot for. Better yet, it gives them a dream, and what could be more amazing than having an off-world dream? Okay, Monday. Tomorrow, we're off to the presses for Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. Hopefully, within a couple of weeks, it will be live on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Borders, Walden Books, B. Dalton, blah, 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 and be ready for your purchase. But you should be able to get yours at rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com. And get autographed and a chance at the audiobook for free. That's right. We're recording, I'm recording Remembering the Future as an audiobook. And as soon as it's ready, we'll go to those that have purchased the book through the website on account of we'll have your email address, and we'll send you a special deal on that. We have a couple of sponsors we want you to visit, not because we like them. Okay, because we like them. But also because they're going to help you. One of the our favorite sponsors is 1-800-PREPARE.com. 1-800-PREPARE.com. Our friend Paul Faust is a former firefighter, and his partner is an EMT, emergency medical technologist. And during the 9/11 disaster, they were both on duty. And what they saw inspired them to start a company. What they saw was that people were generally not prepared. They didn't have a 3-day supply of food. They didn't have the ability to clean their own water. They didn't have so much as a Band-Aid or a first aid kit whatsoever. And so they were a burden upon emergency services like FEMA and like the local police and fire department. And so they were inspired to start this company called 1-800-PREPARE.com. And I've spoken to Paul, I've been to his website, and he has given X Squared Radio a very special deal. And that is, if you will go to 1-800-PREPARE.com and make a purchase, you can put in my name, Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, and you will receive an extra 10% off. Do yourself a favor. Do your family a favor. Do your grandkids or your neighbors a favor. Get prepared. And we don't have 1-800-PREPARE.com as a sponsor just because they sell emergency preparedness stuff. Lots of companies out there do that. And we interviewed lots of companies. Over 30 companies we interviewed. None of them were interested in your business. None of them were able to put together the packages of common sense materials, freeze-dried food, vitamin packs, first aid kits, lightweight stuff that you can put in an old book bag of one of your kids, put it in the hall closet by the front door, and it can stay for 25 years, fresh as the day you bought it. If an emergency comes about, and we all hope that it doesn't, but if it does, you can grab the bag, head out the door with confidence that you can take care of yourself. And that's a very pleasant feeling when everything's going south. Whether it's a tornado, a hurricane, an earthquake, a fire, a flood, or just a car accident, you can have what you need by going to 1-800-PREPARE.com. Also, our good friend Maureen St. Germain, those of you that have purchased the ebook of Remembering the Future or have been to the 4-hour workshop, which if you are interested in having that workshop in your area, you can always go to X Squared Radio, fill out the information. I will be more than happy to come to your town, city, or hamlet and put on a 2-hour presentation about the book, which I am told of the thousands of people that have seen it. It's a good presentation, and we'll do a workshop. Maureen St. Germain is the one that recorded and produced the meditation CD that goes with the book. We're happy to have her. She's a wonderful teacher. I think she's a master teacher of the Flower of Life meditation. And her website is MaureenSaintGermain.com, MaureenSaintGermain.com. And you can click on the link at RememberingTheFutureBook.com, or you can click on the link at XSquaredRadio.com. And don't forget to click on the Web Talk Radio link at X Squared Radio. It's a short 30-minute program. The more you click and the more your friends click, the better our chances are of syndication. That means we get to play on the airwaves. Not that we don't like internet radio. Not at all. We've been here 5 years. We love it. We love the spontaneity. We love the free and open press. We love the ability to talk for an hour unfettered with you and with some of the greatest experts in the world without having to stop for any reason. We can say what we want, when we want, and we're uncensored. Although we're very clean and moral here, so you don't have to worry about that. If you want to be part of the program tonight, and we hope that you do, and you're off planet, by the way, the PRSIDs are over, so you can remain at high altitude. But if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us, 530-413-4511, west of Earth, 530-413-4515, and east of Earth, 530-413-4520. I know many of you out there do not have jobs. We're going to talk a little bit about that for about 40 minutes. Hang in there, 40 seconds. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio. I know many of you out there do not have jobs. Sorry about that. I had my my cough button pressed down. It's okay. You're in good company here. With more than 33 million Americans out of work, and there are 30 million more who are underemployed, working outside their chosen fields for barely enough to make their overhead. For all intents and purposes, they're unemployed too. They're not working at what they went to college for. Here in North Carolina, just in Charlotte, there are over 50,000 people out of work. 50,000 people in one city out of work. Oh, they might be working at a fast food place. They might be selling insurance. And they might be working odd jobs, starting up their own landscaping business with their old riding lawnmower that's in their garage, or working on cars in their garage, or doing nails, or painting houses, or cutting hair. But for all intents and purposes, they're out of work. They're just doing enough to get by. We hear government trying to be cheerleaders and waiting for us to have enough confidence to restore our buying with borrowed money. We hear the president hit the bully pulpit on a regular basis talking about consumer confidence as though it's something we have control of, as though we can reach down in some mysterious bank account, some glass jar we have buried in our yard that they don't know about. We can go down to the stores and start buying again. We can go down and make a $5,000 down payment on a new car and take on payments we have no idea how we're going to make. We go out and try and buy a house with no money down, which can't be done anymore, because those that did it went bankrupt and took the banks with them. So there are a lot of tension. There's a lot of right on the edge of losing hope out there. And there's no luck with trying to get good service out of people either. If you paid for something and you didn't get it, oh, you can complain, but you're not going to get a refund. You're not going to get any kind of service back because they can't afford it either. They got your money and they don't have to give it back. Those of you that have small businesses and you sell on PayPal, how many times have you shipped your item only to have it come back opened and used and then have them demand a refund on PayPal? Because they've used your product now. They've read your book. They've listened to your music. That's the kind of planet. That's the kind of country we're becoming. When we view the future and the potential of all potentialities out there, this is what comes back to the past, which is the present, of course. We are all individuals who make up a grand society of beings. Our average consciousness is what forms the reality we generally experience. While tens of millions of us are experiencing scarcity and lack right now, it is difficult, if not impossible, to focus on anything but that. It affects our relationship with our kids. It affects our relationship with our spouse and our loved ones, our families, the people with whom we work or with whom we used to work. It affects our neighbors. It affects those with whom we go to church. It affects our blood pressure and even our genetics, because the energy that we are radiating around our body with our own consciousness affects the molecules that make up our body, and thus affects the genetics that make up our immune system and our evolution. This is not the kind of energy from which we grow an evolving, wonderful, beneficial, benevolent society. It's very difficult to grow this out of scarcity. What we hope for, what we dream for, is bounty, abundance. But there is no bounty left in us. It seems like no matter how hard we try, there is no hope of escaping this situation. On any given day, Monster has perhaps 2,000 new jobs posted. Now it has been flooded with ads and recruiters who have no jobs but want to sell ad space to make money. So they artificially create hits. They create business and traffic and dwell time. Those are the things that they sell to make money. Monster doesn't have the jobs to post. It doesn't matter what job you apply for. It was just filled, or it's no longer available. McDonald's is staffed with teachers, accountants, engineers, and even bankers. The once retired Americans are now going back to work to be able to live with a measure of dignity. It's no longer high school kids or young college students that you see holding these jobs. It's not. It's 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds, the ones that have already worked their career, and now they find themselves having to go back to work. What is the magic? How does the economy function? Why are the self-help shelves sold out of books, the entrepreneur seminar sold out, and home foreclosures at an all-time high? A depression is a terrible thing unless you have cash. If you have cash right now, you can buy whole city blocks of buildings for pennies on the dollar. Just a little bit of a history lesson, because we often do like to bring the past to X Squared Radio and blend it with the present or the future to paint a good picture. 1929 was the end of a roll. Oh, a roll like this nation has never seen. Businesses could do no wrong. The stock market was jumping. It wasn't climbing. It was jumping through the black, raising the ceiling almost every single month. Oil was booming. Radio was booming. Entertainment was booming. Everything was going gangbusters. It was a roaring economy. Post-World War I saw people ready to put war behind them once and for all. A call for isolationism. That's the practice of buying American only, using American products only, U.S. suppliers, U.S. labor, doing business with nobody outside the United States. And it was working. Everyone was working. And then, in 1929, almost like somebody flipped a switch, the stock market crashed. Now, some would say there were various reasons for this. The fact that people that were buying stock were buying on margin. Margin means you only have to put a dime down on a dollar's worth of stock. So you could buy 10 shares for a dollar instead of one. Only people were buying 100,000 shares for $10,000. And what happened was, when the stock market began to falter and the stock began to go down instead of up, well, the market called the notes due. Well, the person that bought 100,000 shares with $10,000, hoping they make a million, didn't have $90,000 to make it good. And so they went bankrupt. First one, and then 10, and then 10,000, and then 10 million, and the market crashed. However, there were other conditions going on at the time. If you'll remember, the Treaty of Versailles required that Germany repay reparations to all the countries that it had wronged in World War I. Indeed, the Treaty of Versailles destroyed Germany and kept it destroyed, gave it no way back, gave the people no way back. To make matters worse, it was American banks who ended up loaning the money to Germany to pay the reparations. And so when Germany decided to default on those, it pulled the American banks down with it. There was no FDIC in those days. No. People put their cash in the bank, trusting the bank. And the bank closed its doors and kept the money. The middle class evaporated overnight. Overnight, like a spilt glass of water on hot asphalt, it was gone. The only thing that existed then were the poor impoverished people working for 75 cents a day and all the potatoes they can carry home, and the mega rich. Billionaires and paupers, that's all there were. The billionaires sailed back and forth between Europe on their private steamers. They bought city blocks and skyscrapers and millions of acres of farmland. They bought railroads. They bought railroad cars. They bought oil wells. They were making money like money was air. And labor was so cheap, they almost had to pay nothing to make their wealth. And there was no ability to keep children from working in those days. And so in the northern states, a lot of the factories worked young kids, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds. And when they got injured, they just sent them home, crippled, and replaced them with others. Because somebody, everybody, had to work at something. But there was a way out, and it was engineered, and it was devastating, and it was called war. War pulled us out, and the same billionaires that made the money before the war were making the money during the war, selling weapons, vehicles, fuel, bearings, clothing to both sides. Profiteering off of everyone who was willing to pull a trigger and pay to do it. And so it got even bigger. After World War II, the economy began to boom. I'm sure you've heard the term, boom. Boomers, baby boomers. And then Generation X, the children of the baby boomers. In those were star children, indigo children who came here, highly aware of a very organized and very high level of life, not from this world, and generally unable to do anything about it, except not be able to live in harmony with this one. And so in the 60s and 70s, they began to create music and art and politics, and slowly but surely we began to awaken. We began to realize that we can't just keep consuming our planet. However, those in power still had nothing better to do to generate commerce than fight one another. And so since World War II, the major powers have been at war in some form or another ever since. And when we stop, the economy falters. This economy that we have right now is the result of 50 years of tax and spend. So who is in charge? How can we turn this around and begin a cycle of plenty again? There is a chain of ownership and bounty that has been broken. So how do we fix it? That's a good question. I want your input on this as well. I'm going to keep talking. I'm going to keep giving you these ideas. I'm going to take you down a path you may have never heard before. It isn't going to be easy, but it's doable. But you can join in. If you're off planet and you've got that 100,000 foot view of Earth, 530-413-4511. West of Earth, 530-413-4515, and east of Earth, 413-4520. Area code 530, Paradise, California. Some say the president is at fault. They say he has robbed the taxpayer and shuffled trillions of dollars to the wealthiest corporations. I don't know if I buy that, but let's continue. There is a philosophy in Washington that if General Motors has a problem, the country has a problem. So government now owns 60% of the preferred stock of General Motors, a vast majority of the grant funds, low interest loans, and loan guarantees go to, you guessed it, General Motors. General Motors received a $40 billion dollar bailout. From who? You, the taxpayer. And then, a few months later, had the unmitigated gall to have banners printed and sent out to almost every dealership in the country that say, General Motors has paid back its loan 5 years ahead of schedule with interest. Absolute nonsense. A more false statement has never been put in print. And yet, my old General Motors hung those banners out as though it was true and tried to start business up and get it going again. How did they pay it back? They didn't. They borrowed the money from you, the taxpayer, and they paid back the loan that you, the taxpayer, gave them. And now they're getting ready for another initial public offering of stock. Anybody who lines up to buy General Motors stock is a fool. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, well, you know how it goes. That General Motors stock better lay on the shelf, people. That's all I can say. And if the leadership of this country doesn't work for the White House, they are immediately fired. If the leadership of General Motors doesn't go along with what the White House wants, or they speak out like, we don't like being called government motors, it hurts our reputation. We don't like that the government owns 60% of our preferred stock. Well, Mr. Ed Whitaker, CEO of General Motors, receiving tens of millions of dollars in salary and bonuses over the years, was asked to resign and took millions in bonuses with him, even though his leadership is what bankrupted one of the world's largest corporations. Some say it is the consumer who is at fault. Well, if the people's jobs had not been exported to less expensive countries, the people would still be working, getting paid, and we'll be able to buy the things that will stimulate the growth we want to see. The U.S. doesn't manufacture things anymore. We are nothing more than a showroom for cheap goods made around the world. Oh, yes, some of them are, quote, made in America. Oh, yes, there are Americans that work at these factories. They wear the uniform, they get the check, they have the health care, they go home with their money. But those aren't U.S. companies. And the profits from those businesses don't stay in this country. They get siphoned off by the hundreds of billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, drained out of our economy and taken overseas. Taken offshore to China, to Japan, to Korea, to Britain, to Germany, and almost very soon to India. Those companies don't stay here. Those companies aren't from here. So it's a global economy, right? Well, okay, if that's the case. The question most people ask is, why did our jobs leave? People, Earth explorers, the answer is simple. So simple. Foreign countries were able to manufacture what we make for about one quarter the cost. Now, if you're willing to go to Walmart and buy a shirt for $25 that is U.S. made, when there is a shirt from China for $7 on the rack next to it, then we can win back these jobs. Or would you rather the government add $18 tax on the Chinese shirt to make the two shirts the same price? Sure you would. But let me bring some more past here to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. We already fought two wars over that. One was brother against brother, right here on our own soil. It is fine to say that what we want is to keep jobs here in the U.S., but when Japanese or Korean products hit our markets that meet our quality requirements and are 50% cheaper than products made in the U.S., it is the consumer and no one else who makes these decisions. And while you think it's okay for you to purchase the cheaper or even better made foreign product, while demanding that everyone else buy the U.S. made product, you can obviously see the problem with that idea. Now, I was in the automotive industry in 1982 when foreign manufacturers, namely Toyota, arrived in the United States with the Celica, the Corolla, and the Supra, and handed our hats to us. You know why? Because they were a better car. They shifted better. They drove better. They were quieter. They got way better mileage. They were more reliable. And they were cheaper. My goodness. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why people bought their cars. If I could buy a Supra that could outperform anything made in America, outlast it, go 100,000 miles without a tune-up, and drive well and feel good, it was a good car. They still make good cars. We were making the Aries K. We were making the Mustang II. Come on, people. You remember those pieces of junk. We made those cars. We thought those were quality cars. Well, no, not really. We built them, we put them on the dock, and we expected you to buy them. And you didn't. I didn't. Well, okay, I drove a Ford pickup truck, which I've driven pickup trucks for the last 35 years. And I'm sorry, that's just the way I am. I'm a pickup truck guy, okay? Yes, I've gone to the extended cab so I can recline my seat a little bit. But I like to haul stuff. Not all the time, but when I do, I do. So I don't drive a car, I drive a pickup truck, and I've always driven American-made. That being said, I gotta tell you, the foreign-made pickups are better. They work better, they last better, they perform about as well, and they're priced better. What can you do? Well, what we have to do, people, as Americans, we have to get better. We have to get smarter. We have to realize that we've got to be able to make a product that Americans will buy and can buy. But I'm afraid those days are over, people. Those days are over. When Scion and Hyundai and Daihatsu and Kia can come over here as fledgling car companies, and within 10 years they have 2 and 3, 4 million square foot plants cranking out cars, hiring Americans. You get the idea. You get the idea. They bring a better minivan. They bring a better small car. They bring a better Jeep. And we buy them. We buy them because we're trying to save money. And that's what makes them money. Because they do what we do without the overhead. Well, let's just talk about the overhead a little bit. What kind of mess did General Motors, Chrysler, Ford, what did they get themselves into? Let's see. Unions, pensions. How about 1,800 lobbyists living in Washington, D.C.? 1,800 lobbyists. Every one of them probably makes better than $100,000 a year and expense budgets to match. What's their job? Their job is to make Congress enact legislation that's favorable to their business. Their job is to take bureaucrats to task and make them give all the grants, all the loans, all the loan guarantees to them. That's their job. That's all they do. They're trained to do it, and if they don't do it, they're replaced. So why can't the economy seem to rebound? Why don't jobs get moving again? What are we waiting for? Why doesn't the economy rebound? Well, there's an interesting little tactic. First, it was tried by Ronald Reagan, and it worked really nicely. the first 2 years of the presidency, it didn't seem like anything was going on. Veto, 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 deadlock, deadlock, deadlock. Nothing was getting done. Oh, budgets were getting passed. Money was being enacted against the national debt, but the money wasn't being distributed. No, 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 no. The money was being slow walked. The money was being banked. It was being slowed down like molasses. Year after year, it was slowed down and it was banked. And then, in the third year of the presidency, all that money that had been slow walked for the first 2 years began to hit the market. It began to hit the businesses. $1 billion here, $1 billion there, $10 billion here, $40 billion there. And guess what? It didn't apply against the third year's debt because it was enacted in the first and second year of the presidency. So it looked like the economy was moving again. It looked like private industry was pulling things out. Consumer confidence was coming back. And sure enough, by the end of the third year, the economy was on the grow again. And by the fourth year, it was great. It was great. And when Reagan ran for a second term, it was an absolute landslide. Landslide. Nobody came even close to him. We would have elected him a third term if we could have. It worked. Obama is trying the same thing. But Obama is now on his 9th vacation in 18 months. 9 vacations in 18 months, people. And I don't know who's graying his hair for him, trying to make him look more wise and more experienced, but it seems to be working too. Staying out of the public eye, making a few public appearances here and there, but generally, we don't have a president. That's okay. That's okay. So why aren't the sales there? The reason the sales are not there is because there are no jobs. So why don't jobs get moving again? Well, because the sales are not there to support the jobs. Because people aren't working. See the problem? There's a solution. There is a solution. Let me run through that one more time so you see the paradox. Why can't the economy seem to rebound? Why don't jobs get moving again? Because sales are not there to support the jobs. No employer is going to hire more people unless he's got orders to fill that he needs people to build them for. And why aren't the sales there? Well, because people aren't working. Now you see the problem. In order for the driver to work, it must originate with the consumer, period. That's all there is to it. If the orders don't show up at the sales desk, no employer is going to hire a single other person. He's not going to add another shift. He's not going to pay overtime. If the sales aren't there, it ain't going to happen, period. So how do we get the consumer started on the road to making the purchases if everything originates with the consumer? Well, let's talk about the ways that we have done it in the past. Let's just talk about it. First, we've tried loosening credit restrictions, or we order the banks to make loans. People then automatically, I don't know why, they automatically go borrow, and then they spend, and they go further into debt. But jobs are created temporarily because people want stuff. People want an iPad. People want a new car. Come on, their car's worn out. It's worn out. They want another car. They can't afford it. They can't go pay cash for it. They got to borrow the money. So they just loosen the credit restrictions. Here, go buy your car. We'll worry about the payments later. We need to sell a car. We need to get the money in the hand of the dealership. That's the way we've done it in the past. Let's see if we got some other ideas. Lyle from Indiana, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Why, thank you, and good evening, Dr. Agnew.
How are you?
I wanted to, Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
How are you?
Fine. And you?
I'm doing wonderful. Things are a little hot down here in North Carolina, but I understand Indiana's doing pretty well.
It's hot up here, too. But things are going okay. And I just wanted to chime in on basically some of the things that you were saying. Most people don't know, but I believe it was in the you were talking about jobs disappearing. The other thing that you have that you might want to know about is that in the bailout bill that was passed for the banks, they also gave money to GM and others to actually move some of those jobs out of the United States into Brazil, into China, and to other places. So they gave a financial incentive for those jobs to disappear.
Oh, yeah. There's more to it than that, that they gave money to homeowners and to businesses to buy solar panels, you know, to make their businesses more efficient.
Right.
And they spent the money in Asia to buy those panels. They didn't buy American panels. They bought Asian panels. So all that tax money went overseas.
Right. And it's, well, and I heard somewhere that because of some agreement that the United States had, that bailout money could not be used inside the United States, basically. And so that's why you had them buying, sending jobs, you know, supporting jobs out of the country, buying the solar cells out of the country. So basically we're being deindustrialized.
Wow, that's the most amazing thing I've ever heard. You mean the banks gave the money on condition that they didn't spend it in this country?
Well, the government, yes. It's in the bailout bill. I listened to Alex Jones, and he actually told where in the bill that you could find it. There and it's being done on purpose. I've listened to several economists that don't work for the bank, don't work for the banking industry, don't work for these stockbrokers, and basically Gerald Celente, and I've heard from him, listened to him, and they are basically saying we're heading for a depression. The only way that we're going to get the United States back. It's going to have to be from a grassroots effort. Don't look for the big GM or IBM or any of those companies to bail out this country. It's going to have to come from us doing business locally with each other or, you know, across state lines.
Well, I like what you're saying. I got to say that the 16th of last month, July, I sat down with U.S. Ambassador of Trade Ron Kirk and Congressman Kissel from North Carolina at the University of North Carolina for about an hour. And we discussed pretty much this very thing. Of course, I didn't know money was being used like that overseas. But we were discussing the high tariffs that are placed on American goods as we try to export them to other countries. And I'm talking about exporting our goods to Yemen, to United Arab Emirates, to Kenya, to Rwanda, to, you know, these different places. And they have tremendously high tariffs, sometimes as high as 30% on our goods. However, right. When their goods come into our country, there's no tariff on them because they say, well, look, we're small, you're big, you don't have to put any tariffs on our stuff. So we complained to Congressman Kirk about that, and he said, basically, if we play on a level playing field, we can compete and we can win. How disingenuous that must have felt coming out of his mouth when he knew that the bailout funds could only be used outside the country to buy foreign goods and not U.S. goods.
You're correct, but let me take you back a little ways. You remember when Ross Perot was running for president?
Sure.
And he warned about NAFTA and GATT. Those were the ones that took, and let me go back before that. You know how the United States funded itself in the beginning? It was
sure.
Based on tariffs. they didn't have an income tax. They didn't have, you know, all these taxes that we're being charged today. They did it with tariffs on other countries. They said, and they did it in like kind. So if a country slapped 100% tariff on stuff that we shipped to them, then the United States did the same thing on tariffs that they came to here to make a level playing ground. And with NAFTA and GATT, they took the tariffs off of, Ross Perot said that if NAFTA and GATT passed, that there would be a great sucking sound with jobs. And that's what happened. They went to Mexico, but even Mexico, now they're in the pickle because they can't compete with China, because China basically uses prisoners to, you know, build the goods, some of the goods. They don't use it for everything, but some of the goods are made by prisoners, basically slave labor.
Well, I was one of the engineers that moved a company from Tennessee down to Mexico in 1992. I was one of the engineers that did that. That was required of us. We had to make 47% of the Tier 1 and Tier 2 parts for Chrysler we had to make in Mexico. Otherwise, Chrysler would not have got the tax incentive.
No. I didn't know that. But with NAFTA and GATT, it helped to take the – basically, China, when they ship goods over here, they don't have any tariffs put on them. But if we have goods going into China, those tariffs are there.
Well, that's not exactly true. I pay a tariff on the stuff that we buy from China. It's not really high. It's probably 15%. And I get it rebated to me if I export that vehicle or those parts back out of the country, then I get that tariff rebated to me. But I pay it. If those vehicles come into this country or those parts come into this country and we make vehicles out of them, we distribute them, we pay the tariff. We pay the duty on those parts that come in the country.
Okay. I'm trying to think what, you know, how we, basically Ross Perot told us the truth, and now we're, if you have a memory, that's the problem these days. A lot of people don't have memories to go back that far, where we're being warned about, you know, what's going on. And
well, there's going to be a little bit of bouncing, a little acclimating as world economies catch up to our economy and our economy drops a little bit and everything kind of levels out a little bit. There are going to be growing pains from that. I understand that. But what is difficult to understand is the rhetoric that's coming from the White House is small business is the key to success. Small business is who we need to support. These are the ones that create jobs in America. Just like the 8 presidents before him said the same thing. However, Congress has a moratorium against money going to for-profit businesses. And the Department of Energy has a complete top-to-bottom blockade on any money going to any company with less than 500 employees. Well, I'm sorry to say, but that's small business.
Right. Well, you know, there basically it's just been described as a game. You know, we have two political parties, and when one falls out of favor, the other one rises, and then they do things. But it's just a script, because if you really look at the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, there's not really that much difference between them. I mean, Obama is still doing the things that Bush did in there. We haven't got out of the wars, you know, and it's amplified because we're giving, you know, they're just printing money and giving money on this and that. The government cannot create jobs. They won't last. That's not government's job to create jobs. They can support.
I agree on one respect, that government cannot create federal jobs for people to go to work, although that's what they're doing. The federal government's the second largest employer in the country. However, government's job is to help shoulder the risk of small business getting started. Now, this means that low interest loans, or at least loan guarantees available to small businesses so that they can get started. Now, these are pre-revenue companies, but they're companies that make products that are high demand. I don't know if you know the way it works, but just because you walk in the door with $1 billion worth of sales in your briefcase, you walk into the bank, they're going to laugh at you.
Right.
Because that means nothing to them. But if you go to the government and say, I have $1 billion worth of sales, I can hire 2,000 people by the end of the year, all I need is a $10 million loan guarantee to kickstart things and get my investors to have confidence in the company to step in, that is government's job. Because that's investing in America. That's what does make it go.
Well, see, I'm not sure on that. The only thing, I'm looking at, remembering the Constitution, there's the Commerce Clause, and the Commerce Clause was only to prevent, one state from preventing another state's good from coming into its, into its borders through it and being sold within another state. But other than that, because if you really look at the Constitution, that's the issue is the federal government is really going beyond its enumerated powers. And that's why we're in the pickle that we're in. If they had just stayed.
No question about that. No question about that whatsoever. They've gone beyond their enumerated powers, and they have way more employees than the founding fathers ever expected them to have. They're called bureaucrats.
Right.
I could tell you that. But, a country has to invest in the technology of its nation. You expect investors to do it. But when venture capitalists, as we'll call them vulture capitalists, move in, the only thing that they're interested in is an 18-month turnaround, flip the company, destroy the jobs, and make the money. That's all they
right.
care about. General Motors, I'll put it this way. A year ago, there were 12 companies that made electric vehicles in the United States. You don't see any for sale. General Motors has bought all but two of them, and you're never going to see their vehicles come to market. I can guarantee you that.
Well, yes.
That is counterproductive.
Well, you got to remember, they're interested in keeping the status quo. The status quo is in oil. And I think that's why we're going through this tumultuous time, is because the old is falling apart. I just, one time I looked out and I was in a shopping area approaching it, and the feeling that I got was decay.
Sure.
And what I got, why I say that, I'm seeing, starting to see, this was months before I started to see empty storefronts in this plaza. They're being boarded up and nobody's moving in. And I just see it increasing and increasing. And, sometimes you have to be hit by that cosmic 2x4. And I believe that's what we're going through now. You can see the financial difficulties that we're going to go through, and it's appearing because of what Greece is going through, that's going to come here. All the monies are tied together, more so the United States with England. So if one of those falls, which one of the economists that I was listening to was saying that they believed the euro is going to take a hit. And if the euro takes a hit, that's going to draw the dollar down also.
Yeah, it probably will. But you remember England, the United Kingdom, isn't on the euro. They still deal with sterling, just like we're still on the dollar.
Right. But others are, Germany has started to talk about they were going to get off the euro. And But I think
the euro is a good idea. The problem is that you're trying to take different value systems in different countries and put them on the same currency. It's probably going to take 25 years for that to stabilize. That would be like us going on the peso and you know, trying to figure out how that's going to equalize. That would take some time. But I like what you said when you first got on. You said that it's got to come from the grassroots. And, you know, in order for this to work, it has to come from grassroots. People have to realize that ultimately government works for us. We've forgotten that. We've forgotten how to take control of that. But the way we do that is we vote or we don't vote. And unfortunately, I think by and large, we've become a country of professional voters. We vote our pocketbook instead of our morals. Instead of what's good for the country, we vote what's good for us individually. And that's what Congress is counting on, because they have bought and paid for their constituency. Their constituency gets a regular monthly check. Somehow, some way, that congressman brings the bacon home for his constituency. And that's why they keep electing him over and over again to Washington. What needs to happen is they all need to be fired. Every single incumbent voted out in November.
I agree, but you have to remember most of the congressmen and senators that are there have been bought and paid for. And so they're just, and in fact, I heard a speech from a senator. I wish I could remember his name. And I don't know if he was on the government channel, but he was saying 94% of the bills that are in the Senate have not been looked at by the senators. They've just been brought to them by the lobbyists who wrote the law. And he was saying that the senators are either asked to vote for it without reading it, and that if they don't do that, then the lobby that is sponsoring the bill will start to go, you know, to their, you know, people that have contributed to them and say to them, hey, you know, we want this bill, and this senator is holding it up. So you're right. Unless we fire all of them, because, you know, they've made it a career. And when the Congress and the Senate, when our founding fathers set that up, they meant for everybody to have one term. And they wanted people in the country to get the experience of how it is to run a government. And it was supposed to be only one term. But these guys have made it a career. And when you make it a career, you'll have corruption, because people can be bought and sold. They have a price. Now, if people were rotated in there, a new person every term, then it's harder to, you know, pay for them, because companies would be spending a lot of money.
Well, that's true. But you got to look at the term of a congressman. It's 2 years. I mean, you can't even figure out where your mailbox is in 2 years. You can't even figure out where the congressional lunchroom is in that amount of time. So I'm all for term limits, because, I mean, they say, well, term limits, we already have them. It's called the vote. Yeah, well, it doesn't work with presidents. And I can tell you right now, it doesn't work with congressmen or senators either. Remember, senators weren't even elected. They were appointed by state legislators. It was the 17th Amendment that made senators run for election, and they started pulling money in from all over the country, even foreign countries, to run for office. But Congress is a different story. It's supposed to be the House of Commons. It's supposed to be the people's house. And two-year term, maybe two or three terms is enough. But 25 years in there, you're exactly right, Lyle. You get corruption. You get dynasties. You get networks set up like Rangel and Waters, and they start taking license with it, saying, well, I've been a congressman for 20 years, and I sit on this committee and that committee, Ways and Means, or whatever the more powerful committees are, and they get away with stuff. They shift money around. They move it and use their influence to stay in office. And you're right. That's where the corruption comes from. So if you just write it in the bill that no matter how popular you are, there's somebody else in your district that can do the job. And they have to, because you're going home.
Right. And there was one other thing that I forgot to mention about the bailout bill. Remember when they first said that they wanted to bail it out, it was to bail out the bad mortgages?
Right.
And then when they passed it, not a penny went to the mortgages. You know what it bailed out? The derivatives that the banks had engaged in. And one of the economists, I'm trying to remember, I can't remember his name. I wish I could. He was saying that the money that they used and the money that they quoted that you heard in the news was just a number that they came up with. The actual bill had no limit on the money that they could get.
Wow.
But what he was saying was that money wasn't enough to cover all the derivatives, and he said the amount. Bob Chapman, and he puts out a newsletter. But if you Google it, you can find him. He appears on the Alex Jones Show, and I think he's on Fridays. But he really is a does an in-depth job, and I've been listening to him for a while, and he's actually said some things, and over time he's been proven right again and again.
Well, help me a little bit, Lyle. What's a derivative?
Oh, it's basically what banks use with each other. You and I can't dabble in it, and it's built on financial instruments like mortgages. And they're taking it's more like how can I say a bet that it's good is it, and I know it's kind of fuzzy and it's kind of hard to explain what they are, but that's why the banks stopped lending to each other, because they couldn't trust that their mortgages that may have been they had rated the company that wants to get the other company, well, Bank A, you have Bank A and Bank B. Bank A may say, hey, I have AAA rated mortgages that are really good. And Bank B will say, well, you know, we're having all these troubles with it. I can't trust that you're really giving me a AAA mortgage, you know, because they bundle all their mortgages up and they do derivatives on that and some other things.
Well, I know in mortgages, like FHA underwrites mortgages, they go through a strict underwriting program.
Yeah, but this is when they may sell their mortgages, their package, or they may like take a bet. Well, it's hard to explain.
Yeah, I see that. Where a bank divests itself of the debt and takes a service release premium, and the other bank begins servicing the debt. I know. My house payment probably went to four different banks by the time I sold it. It was
right.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. And so he said the bailing out of the derivatives will not, he said that money, it's like throwing, you got $1 trillion debt and you're throwing $100 at it. He said it won't last long. And that's why we're seeing issues here. And he said they keep on saying that we're in a double dip recession. Bob Chapman was saying we were in a depression, in the beginnings of depression that'll spread. But
believe that. I think prices are going down and certainly money's not moving. I can tell you that. It's you ever see the movie Zombieland?
No, I didn't see it. I saw the commercials for it.
It's a funny movie. It's with Woody Harrelson. But the point is that investors are the healthy people. And all the businesses that need investment money, they're the zombies. And I can tell you, the investors run fast and they carry a shotgun. They don't want businesses coming anywhere close to them.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's like you said with your books, with I got, and thank you for writing them. You need to be prepared because we're heading for hard times, and it should be within 2 years, if not sooner. That actually a couple of them, like I was telling you, I don't know if you've ever seen Gerald Celente. He's with Trends Forecasting, and he was saying by the end of this year, I think Bob Chapman was saying, it's hard to predict, but he was saying it could be within a year, so heading into next year. But they said it's coming. It's coming.
What do you think about the strategy that I outlined in the first part of last hour, that Obama might be banking the money from the first 2 years of his presidency to let out in the third year to create that kind of false economic growth the way Reagan did? Now, it worked with Reagan, but I don't know if it's going to work this time.
I don't think it's going to work. Both what Gerald Celente and Bob Chapman said was they're going to start a war, and you can see it. We're heading for World War III, and I'd like to, when I was, I've been studying the paranormal, and I like looking at people who predicted the future. And they were talking about, and I can't remember who it was, I just remember reading it, that they were saying when the Third World War comes, everybody, it's not going to be a surprise. Everybody will know it's coming. It's like we're going into it with our eyes wide open. And you can see it coming because they want to go to war with Iran, because Iran does not practice our type of banking. And they want to start World War III. They're talking about using nuclear weapons. So,
well, they wouldn't be really high yield nuclear weapons. I mean, if Iran does have a nuclear weapon, it's going to be a dirty weapon. It's not going to be an enriched.
I'm talking about when we strike them or when Israel strikes them. The United States and Israel were talking about using a low yield nuclear strike on them. But there are some things. People are saying that China and Russia won't go for it because, they're doing business with Iran, or they have agreements with Iran. So, I don't know. I see parts of what I've read in the past coming true, and I said, at the time I didn't know how it would come about, but it's coming. I see it coming about. But the only way that they're going to, you could tell that the people in the United States are disillusioned with government, and you can see that because some states have voted out their incumbent, and it didn't matter whether they were Republican or Democrat, they voted the incumbents out. And I'm with you, we need to vote them out, and ordinary people need to get in there and help run the country. Because, if you look at the Supreme Court nominee, the recent one, Kagan, who has no judicial experience, but they're going to put her on the highest court of the land and expect, she is for stripping away rights. I listened to one show that they talked about, what she wrote, and the Obama was trying to hide what she wrote using executive privilege, but I guess some people had gotten to it before that occurred. I don't know if it occurred or not, but some people had rushed and got what she had written about, and she's about taking away rights, taking away your right to own guns. So,
well, they'll never do that. What they will do is they'll outlaw ammunition. Most people own a gun, but they don't own very much ammunition. And all they really have to do is come up with a government round, stop production on all the other rounds, and that's the end of that.
Yeah. But, one of the things, I do agree with you. I think I've heard you speak of it before, is the alternative energy. And I had remembered running across earth batteries.
Right.
And if you do a search for earth batteries, you'll come across things on the internet, but they were also earth batteries that were patented. So if they were patented, then they had to work to some extent. So,
lived in a house that was 12 volt. It was 12 volt powered. We used generators or solar power or wind to charge up the batteries during the day. We used propane to cook on. And we used a battery-powered lights, battery-powered television, you know, stereo system, all that. And the whole house ran on 12 volts. We weren't even hooked to the electrical power. And it was kind of cool, actually. Once you got used to it, it was okay.
Yeah, and if the depression is coming, we may get a chance to do that again. Because, you know, people are not going to be able to afford things like they used to. And that's, you know, it's going to create opportunity. So it's not going to be all bleak. It's going to be bleak, but it's not going to be totally dark is what I want to say. And we can find the lights if we decide to take that on, take the challenge on and do it. The thing about it is people are comfortable in watching TV and doing whatever they want, and it's not a necessity. But some things, we're coming into a time where you're going to have to do things out of necessity, not out of what, you know, gives you pleasure.
Well, if we plan ahead, though, Lyle, really plan ahead and don't consume everything. You don't have to go buy a $70,000 car, although I would like to see everyone buy a new car because it would certainly help the economy. If you don't have the money, don't put yourself in debt. Stay debt-free. I don't have any debt. I don't owe anybody any money. I don't have much, but that's because I don't have much money right now. But I also don't have any debt, so I don't need much. I can get by on a fraction of what I used to make when I was an engineer full-time. And it feels kind of good, actually.
Yeah, you get more bang for your dollar and don't have to worry about anything, and that's what I'd like to get. I've been slowly getting rid of the debt, but we'll see if I can get rid of it before everything comes down.
Well, I appreciate you calling, Lyle. It's a great conversation. I'm glad you stay up with this kind of stuff. Please call back again.
Okay, I will. Thanks for taking my call. Good night.
Thanks a lot. Good night.
Thanks.
We'll take a short break. We're a little bit over, but, you know, it doesn't really matter because we don't take commercial breaks anyway. I make the commercial break. Now, we'll let you all get a little drink, and we'll be right back. So don't go away. Just relax a little bit. Get something to drink. Lean your chair back. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live this August 22nd from North Carolina. If it's after between 5 and 8 p.m., we're here live, and you can call in anywhere off planet. If you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us 530-413-4511. Anywhere west of Earth, you know where that is, 530-413-4515. And anywhere east of Earth, 530-413-4520. Just by way of reminder, I wanted to let you know our good friends down at 1-800-PREPARE.com, Paul Faust and his partner, Paul Faust, a former firefighter, and his partner, an EMT, put together 1-800-PREPARE.com to make available to people packaged emergency preparedness goods, food, first aid supplies, books, generators, lights, water filters, all kinds of vitamin packs, things that you'll need, and things that will last for up to 25 years in storage. You don't have to do a thing to them. Toss them in an old book bag, put them by the front door, and if an emergency comes up, you never know what it is. Hopefully it doesn't, but if it does, you're prepared. You won't be a burden upon the emergency services personnel. You can take care of yourself and your family and your kids and maybe even a neighbor. Believe me, the reason we picked 1-800-PREPARE.com as an affiliate of X Squared Radio is three reasons. Price, they have amazing package prices on their material. Service, their website is easy to access. It's easy to get shipment from them, advice from them. They're personable. We interviewed over 30 companies to find one that would take care of your needs. And the third one is, they give you a great discount. Just by putting in my name, Brooks, you get an extra 10% off. Get started today. Got a few extra dollars from that last paycheck or a sale of something or a windfall of some kind? Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself and get prepared. 1-800-PREPARE.com. This hour, we're talking a little bit, this program tonight, we're talking a little bit about the economy. What's going on? What are the forces? A little bit of history, a little bit of politics and government brought to bear, because this is probably the biggest thing in the faces of people in the United States today and in Canada and Mexico, Japan, other countries that are listening to us. We're not pushing patriotism here. We're not saying let's climb under the national banner and wave it and charge across each other, trying to win dominance over the world. That isn't it at all. What we're trying to do is climb out from underneath the manipulative thumb of our governments. In order for this to work, it must originate with the consumer. It can't be driven by government. It can't be driven by big business. It's just not going to be. And I'm afraid it's also not going to be driven by investors. In case you haven't read the papers, you haven't read Reuters, you haven't read the Wall Street Journal, investors are in hiding. Do you know what this means? Did you see the movie Zombieland? That's what I'm talking about. Investors are the healthy people, and the small business and people that need their money are the zombies. And let me tell you, investors, they got a shotgun, and they can run fast, and they're going to survive. In order for us to survive, in order for the people to survive, we must originate the solution, period. So how do we get the consumer started on the road to making purchases? Because I can tell you, jobs are not going to start unless there are sales at the front door. We'll talk about the ways we have done it in the past. First, we loosen credit restrictions, or we order banks to make loans. Then people borrow, they spend, they go further into debt. And jobs are created, but they're temporary because those people eventually will go bankrupt. They will lose their jobs. They will stop buying because they're all charged up on their credit cards or the finance companies have loaned them all the money they're going to loan them, and that's it. They're out. They're done. They're not going to go to Walmart or the mall anymore. They're not going to buy a car or a motorcycle or a jet ski or anything you've got for sale on eBay. The other way to do it is to stimulate small business growth. Now, these are high growth situations. There are no pensions or retirement funds choking the profits from the company. There are no global owners pulling all the profits of the company and shipping the cash offshore. And yet government does not see this formula. Why? It's simple. They want to be reelected. Let me say that one more time. The reason government doesn't see this formula, doesn't work this formula, is because they want to be reelected. Yes, you are the voter, but it doesn't take votes to win. It takes money to win. It doesn't take votes to win. It takes money to win. And money comes from corporations who want that grant money. They want the loan guarantees. They want the special tax breaks that Congress can give them. Who pays? You do. And you fall for the same old sales speech every 2 years, and you vote the same trash into office year after year. Lawyers who speak and smile and then laugh at you for being so stupid every election. I've heard them myself. I'm telling you. They lean over to me and say, there's a reason those guys are working out of their garage. That's you they're talking about. That's the entrepreneur. That's the engineer working in his garage, working in his attic, working in his side shop that's come up with a great idea that can deliver low-cost energy to you or keep you from using so much gasoline or reduce the overhead of your home expenses or your business expenses. Trust me, you hear about it in the news, you hear the rhetoric, oh, you hear the sales pitch that we're giving money to small business who can lower the cost of utilities in hotels in Las Vegas, or can generate cheap light bulbs or light bulb technology or dope that goes on the inside of the light bulbs that will fluoresce at a lower energy so we can use 10-watt light bulbs instead of 40-watt light bulbs. But I'm telling you, it's just a sales pitch. That money isn't going to go to you. Forget about it. You wanted to know how to fix this, and I'm going to tell you. We can fix this. We can turn this economy around, no matter what country you're in. We can turn this economy around in 2 years flat. 2 years. I think if we learn well enough as consumers and voters what to do, we may never be in this situation again. We will never be manipulated by politicians. We will never be called to war to solve our economic woes. And I don't care how vocal the leaders of another country might be. I know the president of Iran is inflammatory, but he's not really Iran, okay? The people of Iran don't follow this man. I know Iranians. I work with Iranians. They are intelligent people, many of them schooled in the West. They love freedom. They love being able to travel the world. They're intelligent, smart, hardworking people. It's a clean, productive country. They don't want war. They don't want to go this way. What you see is what the news media wants you to see. It's all fake. It's not real. The solution is so simple, and yet there are tens of millions of professional voters out there who are bought and paid for, and they are your neighbors. They are paid by Congress to vote for them over and over again, and they eventually don't mind even being used because they come back every 2 years and they do the same thing over and over again. Afraid of losing their check. The rest of the nation can go to hell, but they won't lose their check. No, no, we'll be okay. I gotta keep pulling that blue handle. I gotta keep pulling that red handle, or I'm gonna lose my check. You know what the bureaucrats call congressmen in Washington? Temps. Temps. Individually, they are as powerless as a second lieutenant in the Air Force. Okay, if you've never been in the Air Force, let me explain this to you. A second lieutenant has to salute everybody. He has to salute the non-com below him, and he has to salute every single officer because they all outrank him. A second lieutenant is like a private of the worst kind. You don't want to stay a second lieutenant very long in the Air Force. Okay, now you know. Individually, congressmen are as powerless as a second lieutenant in the Air Force. But as a group, they are the most powerful body on earth. And I'm telling you, the solution is to fire them all. Yes, your state too. If you cannot find one smart and decent man or woman in your district, then you aren't looking hard enough. Find them and send them to Washington to represent you. That's what they do. That's all they're supposed to do. Three terms and bring them home and replace them. Do it, and you will see the flowers again in the spring. This is the solution. You have to end the dynasties in Washington. You've got to fire them all. There are only 435 men and women in that body, Congress and the Senate. Now, you can't get rid of all the Senate in 2 years, but you can get rid of them in 6 years. Every 2 years, a certain number of them comes up for election. Fire them all. The more senior your senator is, the less you get to see him, the less he is in your state. Oh, he might show up for a Veterans Day parade, but he doesn't work with your state. He doesn't care about your state. He's a national politician, and his job is to keep the party powerful. That's it. He doesn't care about you. So again, let's review. Stimulate small business by sharing the risk of startup. That has to be done. It has to be done. Small business cannot go into the local bank and say, I want to start a stereo speaker company. I want to start a company that makes car seats that are safer. I want to make a better telephone. I want to make a stereo mixer. I want to make shoes that are more healthy for people. I want to make wheelchairs. I want to make special battery-powered wheelchairs. They can't just go into the bank and borrow money. Can't be done. I don't care if you have $1 billion worth of sales sitting on the table. It can't be done. Somebody has to share the risk of startup with this company. This allows people to go to work, to put their energy behind making a small business a success. By the way, a small business is one with less than 500 employees, okay? That's the definition of a small business. By the way, you should know, the Department of Energy doesn't give grants to companies with less than 500 employees. Sorry, doesn't happen. That's their policy. No small business, period. And that's straight from Christine Johnson herself. No grants, no loans, or loan guarantees except to billion-dollar companies. That's all that goes out. We need to stop that today. Today. How can we do that? It's August. In a few days, it's going to be Labor Day. Labor Day. Every even year, which it's 2010, begins the campaign season. Yes, they've been around town raising money and shaking hands, but that's not really campaigning. Campaigning starts Labor Day. Everybody knows it. Okay? You have 3 months, less than 3 months to take action. You got to find somebody besides the incumbent to vote for. And you better find them quickly. You better call them up and write them a letter and say, I'm going to vote for you because we're going to throw our incumbent out. And I'm going to send you to Washington. I want you to remember these words. No grants, loans, or loan guarantees to billion-dollar companies. Repeat after me. No, you over there. over there, raise your right hand, all you over there. Get this. No grants, loans, or loan guarantees to billion-dollar companies. Repeat that. Okay, very good, very good. No grants, loans, or loan guarantees to billion-dollar companies. Only to companies with less than 500 employees. In fact, preferably less than 50 employees. These are the companies that we need to share the risk with. We have enough of the billion-dollar companies. Those people go to work, they use their paychecks to buy things, and when they buy things without going into debt, guess what? Production increases to meet the new demand. Startup, more people back to work. Startups put more people back to work. The cycle will support itself until large corporations begin buying them up and shutting them down, laying off the very people who are buying the things in the first place. By the way, I should let you know, General Motors just bought another small electric car company, shutting them down and swallowing their cash like locusts. Just thought you should know how Obama's car company is using your tax dollars. Bright Automotive. Bright Automotive used to be a bright company, used to have an awesome design for a lightweight hybrid. They were going to change the world. Now they belong to General Motors. It's not productive to wonder why or how manufacturing jobs left our country. It's done. It's spilt milk, people. Furniture companies once existed in the Northeast where the maple forests were. Labor became too expensive, and the furniture companies moved south, where labor was cheaper. It stayed here for about 20 to 25 years, and then furniture companies left the South and headed overseas to China. Well, guess what? China almost lost the whole furniture industry because the quality was so bad, nobody would buy the stuff. People were sending it back. It was falling apart in the showroom. The furniture business is now moving to Vietnam. It's moving to Indonesia. It's moving to Malaysia. And guess what? The quality's really good. The workmanship is amazing. You're going to see some pretty fine furniture come in as imports very soon. At least the wood frames. They may get upholstered here, but it's pretty amazing what they're able to do. So, it makes its round. But it's spilt milk. It's gone. Forget about it. What is important is to make some more. We got to make more manufacturing jobs because we're not getting those jobs back. Those companies that left here, they did so because they had to. If they did not leave, they were going to go broke because you, the consumer, would not buy their products at the price they had to sell for because you had a choice and you are the ones who made it. You're the ones who made it. And I got to tell you, if I'm looking at two shirts, one for $25 and one for $7 at Walmart, you know which one I'm taking home. You know which one I'm taking home. If I'm given a choice, that's exactly what I'm going to do. If I'm given a choice between an SUV that costs $18,000, has a V6, built-in XM radio, automatic air conditioning, is comfortable, gets 30 miles to the gallon, and it costs $18,000, and one that costs $37,000 that's 1 foot longer, gets half the mileage, which one do you think I'm going to buy? I can buy a lot of gas for $18,000. I can buy a lot of gas for $18,000. I got to tell you, I'm going to make the choice to buy the Japanese car. I'm going to make the choice to buy the Korean car because at the end of the day, it's my personal economy that counts. I'm not going to save the country by buying a Cadillac Escalade just so General Motors can stay in business. Not going to do it, people. I'm going to buy the Toyota. I'm going to buy the Lexus. It's a little cheaper and maybe a little better quality, and maybe it'll last longer and hold its resale value better. It's about quality. It's about what does quality mean to me. Those jobs are done. But there are thousands of other products, solar panels, windmills, shoes, bicycles, guitars, all kinds of consumer goods. You can't imagine how many. Just go to a trade show. It'll blow your mind, the products that are there. Go to Las Vegas sometime and see the latest software, wizardry, computers, and everything that are available. A lot of that's American made. A lot of that's assembled by American people. A lot of it's small business trying to get a start. Seek them out and do business with them. Now, we have to live with that choice you all made, and I made, the $7 shirt over the $25 shirt. Or we can learn from that choice. If we learn from that experience and you are ready to do something about it, then we have to get small business started in this country. We got what it takes. The only way you do that is to get capital into their hands so they can get started. Now, it isn't coming from investors. I told you about the movie Zombieland. If you haven't seen it, you need to rent it. Woody Harrelson is amazing in this movie. If you've seen zombie movies, forget about it. This is a zombie movie you'll like. Humorous, and it has a lot of good life lessons in it. Well, investors run faster and they carry shotguns, so let me just put it that way. There are two ways to get capital into the hands of small business. No, it doesn't come from venture capitalists. Forget about that, too. That's software only. If you write software, go talk to a VC. If you're into any other kind of business at all other than healthcare, forget about it. VCs are not for you. You need to find an investor. Good luck. Good luck. They're in hiding, and they intend to stay that way. So there are two ways you can get hands capital in the hands of small business, and only two ways. One, government grants and voluntary donations. That's it. One is government grants, and the other is voluntary donations. There is no other way. No other way. Now, I told you we need to fire Congress down to the last lobbyist and staffer. It's got to be done. If we can get that much done, we have a winner. I'll tell you two things that we're going to avoid. We're going to avoid a depression that'll make 1929 look like a walk in the park, because this one's going to suck the whole world down the hole if it happens. And the other thing we're going to avoid is war, because if we elect a new Congress, we're going to elect a new philosophy, and they're not going to be pulled into the partisanship and the cronyism that we have seen in past administrations. Now, you've already heard tonight on this program right here that the administration has a plan, and the plan for exit is war. The most common enemy number one is Iran. I'm telling you, it's fake. It's phony. It doesn't exist. Even if Israel gets mad at Iran and goes over there and blows up their reactor, that's not a reason to go to war. We do not go to war with Iran. Iranians do not want to go to war with the United States or anybody else. Okay? It's just saber rattling. They don't want to do it. The press is playing for you a play to get your emotions up. Forget about it. Iran wants to survive, and they know they can't survive if they go to war. They know it. So that's the second thing that we can avoid. Now, I told you, once we get this done, we have a winner. If you won't take action on that, then you have no choice but to donate funds of your own to small businesses. Find one and send them money every month until they get going. If a few hundred thousand of you do it, we can turn this country around, and the global corporations can't do a thing about it. Now, you might think, I'm only one guy. What can I do? Maybe I can afford $20 a month, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'll hold you to that. $20, $20. If that's all you can afford a month, that's fine. Even $10 would be amazing. I'll tell you how. It's called economy of scale. Economy of scale. $20 times 100,000 people is $2 million a month. You send $2 million a month out to a half dozen small businesses, and you have just provided them the funds to get started. Some of these businesses only need $100,000 to get going. Some of them need a half a million. Half a million dollars, and they can take the rest themselves. They can overcome the immediate overhead of getting a place, getting some tools, shipping the first few orders, building on that, living on a shoestring for a while, living in the shop with a cot and a bottle of aspirin. Yes, I've done it. And you can get going. You can get things moving because they're dedicated and they believe in what they're doing. And they don't want to take your money, but they have to. $2 million a month would be a big help. Let me tell you how the economy of scale gets better. $20 a month times a million people. Oh, now you're talking $20 million a month. Now you're talking helping 20, 50, 70, maybe 100 small businesses get started. 100 small businesses. 100 small businesses could hire 10 people each, maybe 20. But if they hire 10, that's 1,000 new jobs a month. 1,000 new jobs a month, and that's just the beginning. Just the beginning. The government has poured out billions, billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in the last 2 years. And you know how many jobs they've created? That's right. Negative 3 million. Very good. Your math is just as good as mine. That's right. The money they put out actually lost jobs. Why? Because they put the money in the wrong place. They spent the money with companies that have over 500 employees. They spent the money with billion-dollar corporations that weren't even American. That's right. They, American Congress, sent money through the Department of Energy to businesses that didn't even stay here. Billions of dollars in homeowner-backed subsidies to put solar cells, wind generators, and all kinds of energy-saving devices, and none of the money stayed in this country. It was all spent in Korea or China. No American companies got money from that. That's the joke. That's the ridiculousness of it. Yes, I just made up a new word. Ridiculousness. That's right. The money didn't stay here. Your tax money that they took from you out of your check involuntarily, they gave to companies in China and Korea and Japan. They wouldn't give it to American companies. Now you know why we need to fire them. You with me? That's what we call grassroots. That's what gets the ball rolling. Our numbers off planet, if you've been watching this from 200 miles up, those of you in the International Space Station, it's a free call for you, 530-413-4511. If you're listening to X Squared Radio, I'd love to hear from you. 530-413-4511. West of Earth, 530-413-4515. And east of Earth, 530-413-4520. We're talking about real world solutions for getting us out of this mess, turning the country around and walking away from war. We can do it. We can do it. It can be done. We can make it. But it's going to take your help. And maybe if you've got the ability, you can take this archive, give a gift to somebody of an archive, $2.50, people. $2.50 will give you a whole month of access to X Squared Radio archives at xsquaredradio.com. $20 will give you an entire year. People, there are over 700 hours of content posted at X Squared Radio with some of the world's best experts. And they're listed. All you have to do is go to xsquaredradio.com. You can read about them if you're interested in their content. $20 helps us keep the lights on here. If you don't want to spend $20 with us, then you can go to the network, bbsradio.com. and you can buy an archive with them. If you do that, then you get access to all the hosts at BBS Radio, the number one internet radio network in the world. Put it up against anybody. We've been here 5 years. We're one of the top two programs here because of you, because you listen to us. We try to bring you the best content that we can. By the way, if you have it in you that you think you might like to try your hand at, or your voice at being a talk radio personality, I would be happy to sponsor you. So you contact me and I'll get you through to the producer and we'll get you your own program. If you think you could do an hour a week or hour a day, contact us. Be happy to set you up. I think if you've got something to say, there's probably people out there willing to listen. And we'd be happy to give you a start. I'm going to go ahead and take a break now because we're at the top of the second hour. We got behind on the first one because we had a great caller, and we just like to stay with the great callers. If you want to call in, just take a break, get something to munch on, and we'll be right back in about 4 minutes. Don't go away. This is X Squared Radio, and I'm your host, Brooks Agnew.
Make me a witness. Take me up out of darkness, out of doubt. I won't weigh you down with good intentions. We'll change colors.
Sons. こんばんは。ただいま。私は X Squared Radio のブルックサイドニューです。私はこの仕事が好きです。That is for my Japanese friends, Ramon, who is now working in Japan. Just wanted to let you and your friends know we're thinking about you here in North Carolina. I know it's in the morning there, but we're happy that you've always been part of X Squared Radio. Don't forget our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com either. A couple of commercials we've run for them tonight. Marine Saint Germain is one of the best teachers of Flower of Life meditation in the world. I have taken all of her classes and been around the world with her on to Tibet and other places. And I've got to tell you, the meditation CD that we sell as part of the Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel book is the best that's out there. You can learn this meditation very quickly. If you're a busy person like I do, you don't have a lot of time to learn a complex meditation. You certainly don't have the time to take to meditate each day, maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. This is the meditation for you. It allows you to drop into a meditative state in 17 breaths. 17 breaths. Now, that's efficient, people. And in the book Remembering the Future, we teach you the 18th breath. Once you learn the 18th breath, you can use it anytime, anywhere, except when you're driving, because you will sometimes disconnect from your body, which can be rather hazardous for you, your vehicle, and your passengers, and those in the immediate vicinity of you. But we want you to take advantage of the meditation because it helps you listen to the universe. And this is the key to making the law of attraction work, is being able to listen to the energy that's coming back from the intention that you yourself sent out. And you're going to learn how to do that in the book, Remembering the Future. And you can get your copy in electronic version right now, in hard copy very soon, because tomorrow morning the book goes to the printer. How about that? It won't take long, a couple of weeks. It's going to be live, Amazon, Barnes & Noble Books, A Million Borders, Walden Books, and everywhere good books are sold. But if you want an autographed copy, and if you want access to the audio version when it's ready, then you need to go to rememberingthefuturebook.com. Of course, if you buy the electronic version now as a PDF, you get all the pictures in color. You also get a 25% discount on that package when it comes out. We'll have your email address. We'll send you a note with a code. And you can fix yourself up with a hard copy to put on the shelf that's autographed and have access to the audio version. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. Well, enough of politics and changing of the political scene. Let's talk about terraforming. We've talked about changing the political side of a planet and where people dwell and how they get along with one another and work commerce. Let's talk about the physical part of forming a planet for habitation. As you know, if you've listened to X Squared Radio on a regular basis, they have recently discovered an Earth-like planet. Oh, yes, it's the right temperature. It's in the Goldilocks position. It has about 1.5 times the gravity of Earth. So if you're chunky, forget about it. But if you're svelte, you know, a nice 100-120 pounder, and you can get used to heavy gravity, this might be the planet for you. You'll be lean and muscular, that's for sure. Oceans and trees and life could exist on this planet because there's liquid water. And it's in close proximity, or at least perfect proximity to a sun, putting out generally the right wavelength of light. And it's not too far away, 20 light years, 20.5 light years, people. That's doable. Because as you know, if you accelerate at light speed, or very close to light speed, I should say, if you accelerate at about one gravity of acceleration for about 3 months, 4 months, and then cruise on at the right speed and then decelerate, it's only about a three-year travel time as far as the spacecraft goes. Now, it'll still take 20 years longer than that, Earth time. But you remember, as you approach the speed of light, time slows down. So your travel time would actually be less than that. And all you really need is the full series of Stargate or Lost, and you could make it 3 years, no problem. No problem. You keep yourself entertained for 3 years and get there. So when we get there, we're talking about terraforming. Or let's drop a little bit closer to home. How about the moon? Come on. The moon's one day's journey away. 250,000 miles away. No, it doesn't have much atmosphere to speak of. But it has a lot of raw materials. We can use the oxygen in the soil to make water. We can use the H3 in the rocky part of the moon to make energy, to make electricity. Once we build greenhouses, we could flood them with carbon dioxide and feed sunlight to them and energy, heat, and you can grow acres and acres and acres of hydroponic food. In fact, it'll even grow in moon soil. And this is just on the surface. If we decide to bore down into the planet or make use of some of the volcanic caverns that we see on the surface of the planet and explore inside the planet, we could even build entire habitats on the inside of the planet and be fairly safe from asteroids. The planet hasn't had volcanic activity to speak of in a long, long time, so it should be pretty stable. Now, what are the advantages? Why would we do that? Why would we go there and terraform the moon? Well, there are a couple of advantages to it. Number one is, of course, low-cost space travel. It costs a whole lot less money to launch a heavy load from a planet that's got 1/6 the gravity of Earth, plus not much atmosphere to speak of. You don't really have to worry about wind resistance or ice crystals or anything like that forming on the craft. You don't have to worry about weather clearance or anything like that. You could launch very low cost, very heavy loads into orbit. And we're talking about, you know, lunar orbit is 250,000 mile orbit around the Earth. That's way out there. Our geosynchronous satellites are only 23,500 miles out. Our satellites that you see go overhead about every few minutes, there are several thousand of them now, they're only a couple hundred miles up. So the moon definitely gives us a vantage point, a launching place to space that we don't see. The moon also has a very slow solar cycle. It only goes dark once every 28 days. In other words, a lunar day is 28 Earth days long. That means you can gather a lot of solar energy. You don't have to just gather 8 hours a day the way we do here on Earth. You can gather roughly 20, 22, 23 days of sunshine from the moon. And that makes a lot of sense. That's free energy. Without the atmosphere blocking it, you get the full range of frequencies all the way down to the shortwave UVC, which is in, somewhere around 320 nanometers, which is pretty high energy. You can use that to make electricity. That electricity can be used to make just about anything we want to make on the moon. Now, it could employ a lot of people, and it could employ a lot of people and moving goods back and forth between Earth and the moon. This would be a huge commercial boon. In the meantime, we would be taking care of terraforming, and we would learn a lot, because not only are we terraforming a planet that has little or no atmosphere, but we're terraforming a planet that, for all intents and purposes, is lifeless. So everything that we do on that planet is fresh and new. Now, if we go to planets that have had former life, like Mars, or may still have life, like Titan, the moon Titan, then we could learn how to do that from our experience on the moon. And it's doable. you think about, well, it's too hostile of an environment. Hey, we have hostile environments here on Earth. We have Death Valley. We have the Arctic. We have the Antarctic. These are pretty hostile environments. And generally speaking, most Americans, actually only 15%, no, most Americans spend less than 15% of their time outside. That's true. I'm just telling you, it's a fact. 15% of their time outside. Most of the time, the weather in most areas is inclement. It's too cold. It's too hot. It's too wet. The sun is too intense. We don't like going out in our nice clothes. So we stay in our vehicles with controlled environments, or we stay in buildings with controlled environments. We just don't go out of doors for long periods of time, unless you live in California. There, it's okay to be outside most of the time because the weather is so pleasant almost year-round. It just doesn't get cold in California, and it doesn't really get humid, and it doesn't rain a whole bunch, and the sun isn't too intense. So it's a nice place. That's why the population is what it is. So when it comes to terraforming, some people might say, well, we have problems at home. Why would we go do that? Because this is the inspiration, the hope of the human race. To be able to look to the heavens, to say we want to explore space, to say that not only do we want to explore space, we want to populate space. We want to proliferate. We want to get off planet, one generation, two generations, 30 generations. Imagine what we could accomplish. Imagine the commerce that we could develop if we were an interplanetary race. Maybe we'd learn to get along a little better on this planet. Maybe we wouldn't hate each other so badly. Maybe we wouldn't work so hard to make life rough on one another. Maybe there wouldn't be such poverty. You know, poverty of the kind that's perpetual, that's chronic, is brought on by ignorance. I didn't say stupidity. I said ignorance. It means that they don't know how to do stuff. When you train people to do stuff like work on cars, dig water wells, grow crops, build buildings, handle road materials, construct societies and communities and govern, when you teach people how to do that, then you teach them how to take care of themselves. It does not work with any kind of society to simply ship rice and milk and drop it off and leave it and then leave. That doesn't work so well, because once the rice and the milk is consumed, the beans are eaten, you got to take more beans. We must teach those people how to plant beans. We got to teach them how to grow rice and corn and wheat and barley. We got to teach them how to make linen and cotton. We have to teach them how to build houses, how to wire them, how to plumb them, how to build a water treatment plant so that you can produce clean, potable water for homes. This is terraforming too. Going to sections of this planet that have not had that kind of service and helping put in that kind of service allows those people to take control of their own lives. Instead of living in squalor, in fly-blown, cholera-infested flood banks, teach them how to catch the rainwater and hold it in reservoirs for the dry periods, to irrigate crops, to take care of sewage, to take care of health care, to take care of education, to learn how to sing and dance, to learn how to write and read, to enrich the quality of life by learning from literature and from music. You know, we've seen areas of the planet that are inhospitable. And I mean inhospitable. I'm talking 10% humidity. Talking places that might see a tenth of an inch of rain a month. And yet, you walk into those areas and they're green and they're lush and there are fruit trees growing everywhere, beautiful homes, potable water, schools, everything is running smoothly. That's because those people know how to do stuff. That's because they work hard. They go into an area and they beat nature back with a stick. Or, better yet, they learn to live within her parameters. They use the wind. They use the sunlight. They use the moving water to generate energy and to create a clean, renewable environment for themselves. It's because they know how to do stuff. It's because they have this knowledge and they have this determination to do it. Now, once it's built, is it self-sustaining? No, it is not. No, it is not. I have a perfect example. The Eastern Desert in Israel, land that was acquired during the Six-Day War, was absolutely inhospitable. They couldn't grow a scorpion on that land. And yet the Israelis went in and they irrigated and they planted trees and built roads and buildings, and it was a lush, beautiful, modern paradise. Thousands upon thousands of people lived there because the government encouraged people to go there and invest. And they did. And they went there. And they made out of nothing, nothing but sun-baked rock, they made a paradise. And then, to appease the political pressures being put upon them from the United Nations and other countries, namely their benefactors, the Israelis gave up that property. They withdrew from it, and they gave it over to the Arabs. Now, they volunteered to stay and teach them how to use the irrigation system, to teach them how to keep the trees alive, what genetics it took, to teach them how to maintain the buildings and the energy systems. That help was refused. That help was refused. And within 2 years, it took 25 years to build up this paradise. Within 2 years, the desert had reclaimed it, and it was nothing but a sun-baked rock with a bunch of empty buildings and burned-up trees. No. It is not self-sustaining. You have to know stuff. You have to work hard to keep it, or the planet will take it back from you. Now, this can be done in the most inhospitable places on Earth, even at the bottom of the sea. And it can be done on other worlds. And the benefits of the technology, of the effort that it takes to go there and do that, that's the kind of thing that makes a nation flourish. That's the kind of thing that helps a planet come back and helps us think as a galactic people instead of nations squabbling over 4/7 of the planet, or should I say 3/7 of the planet that happens to be dirt. And by the way, most of that dirt is uninhabited. It's mountains. It's desert. If you fly coast to coast in the United States ever, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Fly over country. You're lucky to see one light down there every few hundred miles. The vast majority of the United States is completely uninhabited. That's right. That's right. Where we don't stretch power lines and terraform the earth with water treatment, sewage treatment, and roads, where we don't terraform it, people don't live. 90% of the population of the United States lives within 20 miles of a coast, and that includes the major rivers. That's it. The rest of the country, tens of millions and millions and millions and millions of acres, completely uninhabited, perfectly tillable, livable land, empty of people. Why? Because it hasn't been terraformed yet. Now, a lot of people think, well, we don't like your way of terraforming. You come in, cut down the trees, pave paradise, and put up a parking lot. Yeah, okay. We agree with that. In the past, that's exactly the way we've done it. But you know, there are really smart architects now, and they have figured out a way to terraform the earth without tearing it up, without making it miserable, without cutting down all the trees and soiling all the lakes and filling all the ditches with trash and digging pits and rolling our disposable baggage and papers and packaging materials and disposable diapers and then burying it in the ground so no one can ever find it. It won't rot, people. I can tell you, I saw a core drilled in a landfill. You're going to laugh. But when that core came up, in that core was a piece of a newspaper. Yep. Guess when that newspaper was printed? 1959, that newspaper was printed and rolled into that landfill. And that newspaper was as fresh and unoxidized and new as the day it was printed. It never will rot because it's too deep. The microbes can't get to it. It's not biodegradable because there's no biology down there. That's nothing but one big buried trash can. Now, that's not terraforming, people. We got to figure out. I came to this realization. I was doing a contract for a company called Rexam Metallizing. What they did is they took paper that had been clay-coated, and I'm talking the big rolls of paper, you know, the big 5,000-pound rolls of paper. And they would slide this roll on a spindle into a great big vacuum chamber. And then they would use big vacuum pumps and they'd pump all the air out of there down to 10 to the minus fifth torr. That's almost a perfect vacuum. It's getting way down there. And then this spool of paper was designed to unroll and roll up on another spool inside that vacuum chamber. And as it did so, it would pass over what we called boats. These were little upside down, look like corn on the cob boats, you know, that you put your butter in and sort of swirl your corn on the cob around so you can get it all over you. And in these boats was maintained molten aluminum. And I'm talking 99.99% pure aluminum. They would heat the aluminum up until it was molten. And in a vacuum, when you're moving paper like that, it becomes electrostatic with a negative charge on it. Well, those of you that know your chemistry know that aluminum has a +3 charge on it. And so sure enough, the aluminum is attracted to the paper. Now, it's a very thin coating in the microns of coating. But what it does, it metallizes that paper. Well, you think, gee whiz, who metallizes paper? Every single time you open a pack of gum that is wrapped in paper that has aluminum on the outside, that's metallized paper. Every single time you wrap a present that has an aluminum sheen to it behind that ink, that's metallized paper. Every single time you buy a package of one dog food, you notice that shiny color, that shiny brown that's on the outside of that bag? That's ink coated on metallized paper. So one day I'm sitting there, of course my contract was to reduce the cost of their doing business, which I did, more than paid for myself being there. But one day I was sitting there and I had an epiphany. Here I was at the coater where this special adhering coating was coated upon the paper, getting ready for this metal coating to be put upon it. And I realized that that roll of paper was unrolling at the speed of about 25 miles an hour through this process, right on through to the other side of the machine where it spooled up and then went out to customers. I realized every single square inch of that paper, thousands upon thousands of 5,000-pound rolls of paper made of trees, cut down, slurried into a slurry, rolled into a cake, vacuum packed down onto a roller, hot packed and rolled out into flat paper. Every single square inch might as well roll right off the end of that machine and right into the landfill. Every single square inch of it was temporary and used for packaging and was just going to be torn off, put in a trash bag, and hauled to the landfill. That was my realization. What an epiphany I had that day. All that work to cut those trees down, to bleach that paper, to make it, to haul it, to keep it dry, right at the perfect moisture content, 5.5%, to coat it, to metallize it, to convert it, that means to slit it into smaller product, ship it to customers. Every single square inch of it might as well have rolled right off the end of that machine and gone right into the landfill. I don't think that's an efficient use of our planet. I think there are other uses for that. Now, if there's a way to recycle that paper at the end of that line, after it's got that aluminum on it, after it's got that party print on it or that labeling printed on it, if there's a way to gather that up and reuse it or make it into something inexpensive that can be used somewhere else, I would support that. I know Formica is made of used paper. I know that certain construction materials like insulation and things like this are made by treated paper fibers that can be blown into walls and used for insulation. It's cheap. It could be sent all over the world and used for that. We've got to start thinking more on a recycling mindset. Yes, yes, it takes more money. Of course it does. But that money goes throughout the system. It's spread out over a whole system of commerce, cradle to grave. And the grave is not a landfill. The grave is a final use that can be used somewhere else for a good purpose, a durable good, something that will last. After that party paper is used, it can be turned into cheap, fireproof insulation for homes. It's a great idea. And I think this is what terraforming is all about. When you're on the moon, it's a little hard to go back and get more supplies. You make use of what you have. It's not a third world country. It's an off-world country. And there's no running down to Walmart to get something you forgot. You have to plan ahead. And you got to have an idea what you want to end up with. You know, I think that's generally the problem. When we started this whole thing called Earth, called society, called the United States, called whatever country you want to call it, there was no end game in mind. We really didn't know what it was going to look like when we were done. We just headed on out and started chopping things down. We started digging it up and smelting it and hammering it out. We didn't realize where we were going or what we were doing. I mean, to think of our railroad system, to look at how wide the rails are in our trains and how big, how much weight we haul on them, we realized, geez, those rails are pretty narrow. Why didn't we think ahead and make those rails 8 feet apart or 10 feet apart or 3 meters apart? Imagine what we could carry on trains if the rails were 3 meters apart. Well, it's all the horse's fault. Yeah, it's all the horse's fault. See, the horses could only draw so much wagon. The wheels were set at a certain distance. That's the same distance as the rails are for railroad. And the reason the rail, or because the railroad is the size that it is, that's why the space shuttle is the size that it is, because that's all that could be hauled on the railroad. So we sort of screwed up our whole end game by making our roads based on riding horses. You know, roads are made today, at least the roads where we're at. You have one lane, then you got the center dividing line, and then you have another lane. And that's it. You're lucky to get a white stripe on the side of the road. And then off you go into the gravel. Well, if you ride a bicycle, those aren't the kind of roads you want to ride on, because it's kind of hard to stay on that white stripe for you and for the car. So why didn't we think ahead and make roads that were wide enough, not just for the car, but an extra 6 feet for the bike, so that the bicycle can use the same road as the cars? Why didn't we think ahead? Well, we just didn't. And now there are governors that are trying to pass legislation that says no roads are going to be built in our state without a bicycle lane. Oh my gosh, you should hear the highway people crying and throwing a fit I mean, they're trying to fight this all the way up and down, but he's not budging. And it's a good idea because, you know what? He has a vision of what his terraformed state is going to look like. And that's what we need. We need to think about what it is this planet is going to look like when we're done. I don't mean done as a human race. I mean done as you done. You started your career when you were 17 or 18 or 24 years old. Did you have an idea what it was all going to look like when you're done? I bet you didn't. Because if you did, it'd be pretty close to that right now. You just took off and started cutting things down and burning. That's what it's about, people. That's why we have these discussions on X Squared Radio. You got to have a vision. You got to think about what it's going to look like when you're done. And that means you got to think outside the box. You got to think like you're terraforming a planet. You know, as we sprawl out of our cities, learn how to live off the grid with independent energy sources, it's putting nature at a risk. Because we're about to put people, humans, out there in the region where only the bugs and horny toads have been. We're going to push them out of their habitat if we're not careful. We've got to learn to live within the terraform. And we got to have a vision what it's going to look like when we're done. You know, I built a house one time. I built many houses, but this particular time I bought the property and then I took a chair out to the property and I sat on the property at sunrise in the middle of the day and at sunset. I did it several days. I moved the chair this way and that way. I watched the sun. I listened to the birds. I watched the trees. And I said, how am I going to put this house on this property so I can make use of the sunlight in the wintertime to keep the house warm? I got access to the woods so I can build my balcony overlooking the trees because it was a 95-acre game preserve and I wanted to see the birds and squirrels and stuff from the house. I wanted to be kind of in the country even though I was only 7 minutes from work in the city. After about 2 weeks, I finally figured out exactly where to put the stakes for the foundation. And that's where that house sits today. And you know something? When I went to sell that house after I built it, I lived in it for a couple of years. I had a small army at the time, 8 people living in the house. It came time, the market was really good. I decided to sell the house. You know, when I had a clear vision of what I wanted, what it was supposed to look like when it was done, and that's what it looked like when it was done, I took 5 photographs of the house. I posted it on the internet. And it sold 3 days later to the first buyer that looked at it for what I was asking. Yeah, you see what happens when you have a vision and you build things according to the vision and it comes out looking pretty close to what you designed because you had an idea what it was supposed to look like when it was done and your vision was clear enough and fit with the planet that you built it on. It's going to work. And it's going to resonate with people, and it's going to resonate with the planet around it. That's what I'm talking about. So if you're sitting out there wondering how you're going to do this, what kind of town you're going to build, and you really want to get out there, you want to get off-grid, you want to get away from the power lines, you want to get away from organized, fluoridated water, and you want to have your own habitat, maybe even a community of habitats. Maybe a couple hundred of you want to move out there and make a community. It can be done. But please, have a clear vision what it's supposed to look like when you're done. And think of it not as though you're moving out in the country to put a human presence where it doesn't belong. Think of it as though you're terraforming and you're going to work within the bounds of nature and the planet. It can be done. If you're off planet, out there, looking down on us, don't look down on us. Pilots have been doing that since 1903. The number is 530-413-4511. 530-413-4511. West of Earth. You know where that is. 530-413-4515. And all these lines are open. East of Earth, 530-413-4520. We're coming to you live August 22nd from North Carolina. We're on the BBS Radio Network. I'm Brooks Agnew, and this is X Squared Radio. And we have talked about making political change. We've talked about making terraforming change to the moon and also to the earth, which can be almost as inhospitable. Yeah, we have an atmosphere, but not much else. You got pretty intense sunlight, pretty dry soil. There's a way, there really is a way of making this work and making the earth fit within nature. You can plant a garden. You can create a community where you really don't need cars to drive around the community. And that's kind of important because clearly 60% of the infrastructural cost of any community are the roads to handle the cars. Curbs, gutters, all that stuff. If you have a central place for the cars and you don't need cars in your community, you can actually move around the community using rapid transit or mass transit of some kind of people movers, or the places where you work. Say you're building a community of internet services. People don't really have to come to one place to work. They can work at home as long as you have fast internet. So you build up fast internet. Let's say you have a 50 meg connection, and you provide a 50 meg connection to those houses and put offices in those houses, then you've got the best of all worlds. You can actually work in and around your home, making use of all the things around you without polluting, without using any energy. And I've lived in a house that there was powered off 12. Excuse me. It was powered off 12 volts. It can be done. Actually, 24 volts is a very common voltage. You can get 12-volt power supplies that run on AC, but if you're generating your energy with a windmill or with solar or with hydroelectric, you can actually generate DC. And DC has some advantages. If it's made close enough to the point of use, because DC doesn't transmit too well along power lines, it'll go for a few hundred feet without much loss, but not much further than that. If you generate it close to the point of use, one of the things missing from your home are the AC, the alternating current fields, that can cause so much anxiety. When you have a DC environment, you have a nice, quiet, magnetic environment. It's actually healthy for you. You can actually extend your life living in a DC environment as opposed to a house that's laced with all kinds of spiderweb wires going through all the walls, ceilings, and floors that are carrying AC signals. If you use DC, all that anxiety, all that frequency, all that 60 hertz hum that your subconscious and your body picks up, it goes away. Everything's quiet. And I can tell you right now, you cannot tell the difference between DC light and AC light. DC light emitting diodes or DC lamps actually put out very nice light. All kinds of colors too. And all of your equipment can run on DC. Your computer can run on DC. Your television can run on DC. You can cook with propane. Propane is non-polluting. You can have it delivered by bottle, or you can drill a methane well in the community and supply natural gas to the houses. Natural gas only emits CO2 and water. That's it. It doesn't emit the carcinogens that coal and gasoline emit that make a significant amount of the gasoline or amount of electricity in this country. Of course, a lot of it's produced with nuclear. That has its own drawbacks. A lot of it's produced with hydroelectric, wonderful stuff, but we don't get that everywhere because there aren't dams everywhere. And a lot of it's produced with natural gas. Some of it now is being generated by wind, and I commend that. Although there are two complaints about wind generators. One is they're ugly. I don't subscribe to that. I think they're rather cool, but I have heard that complaint. And the other is they don't last. They tear up pretty well because, after all, they're out in the wind. The gearboxes are under a lot of strain turning that 1 or 2 megawatt generator, and they only turn 15 RPM. They're difficult to heat and keep lubricated, although there are lubricants out there that make a much better difference. We've talked about those on this program, too. And they're getting better. The blades themselves wear down in the wind. Of course, the higher ones don't get pitted so much from the sand blowing around than the low ones do, but nevertheless, they still wear out. That being said, there are whole companies that are being formed now that refurbish those blades. You see them going up and down the highway, the big 90-foot blades. So wind generation is an awesome use within the parameters of the planet. You see them down in Palm Springs. You see them up in Wyoming. You see them along the seashore on the East Coast. You see them in the river valleys where the wind blows all the time. It's a great idea. It's a wonderful idea, completely renewable. And solar's coming along, but solar is always going to be kind of expensive. Even the solar panel company that we use, yes, it's all American made. Yes, they have 4.65 watts per square 100 centimeters. But a very efficient unit and puts out a lot of energy for a long, long time. They're guaranteed for 15 years. They'll probably last for 25 years without any maintenance at all. No moving parts, no glass, lightweight, and built right here in America. So those kinds of things exist. And if you can build with that in mind, because I think we do have to have electricity, you have to have refrigeration. You don't have to have air conditioning. You can work with swamp coolers, which is just simply cool water that is drained over filters, and then air is pulled into the filters. The water evaporates and generates a nice 55-degree moist, cool air, which is wonderful in arid climates. So it makes it very comfortable. And the only electricity you have to use is just what it takes to spin the squirrel cage. And if you've got solar or wind power, you don't even have to worry about using that. So, or paying for it anyway, that energy comes in and it's clean and renewable. So great ideas. When you think about building your next house, or you think about buying your next house, or maybe you're really ambitious and you're thinking about building a small community or a habitat somewhere, think terraforming. Think living within the bounds of the planet. Don't think about moving in, bulldozing wilderness back, and then putting grass up to the edge of the wilderness because that's what you like to see, fresh mowed grass. Think about living within the community that you're moving into. That means the other animals that are there. Lots of people have tried it. There's lots of information out there on the net. And if you've got ideas about it, we've got about 4 minutes left. Please give us a call off planet 530-413-4511. West of Earth, 530-413-4515, or East of Earth, 530-413-4520. I've really appreciated, we had one call tonight from Lyle, but I've appreciated your audience. I know you're sitting out there listening intently to the program. Some of you are working on your project. Some of you are listening as an archive on Monday morning, the 23rd, or thereafter, and that's cool too. These ideas stick with you. As you're working, sitting there working on your map or your blueprints or your project that you're working on your computer, surfing the web, playing with Facebook, we appreciate you listening to X Squared Radio. Please tell a friend about us because we're here for you. Next week, we're going to try to have a guest on. I'm going to be on Freedom Link Radio this Thursday, and we were on with Aaron McCollum last week. And last weekend, we were guests at the 2012 Alien Event conference in Santa Monica. So make sure to access all of those links. Pay close attention to Web Talk Radio. That's where X Squared Radio has a 30-minute version that's free. You can listen to it. You can send your friends there to listen to it. It's a little fast-paced for 30 minutes. You get a lot of information. Some of it's kind of poignant. It's designed to make you mad, make you happy, make you love a little more intensely. That's what it's for. The more people that click on it, the better our chances are of going syndicated, which means we get to play on the airwaves. And by all means, if you've tuned in late, don't forget 1-800-PREPARE.com. Start your emergency preparedness plan tomorrow. The next paycheck, I want you to go to that website, find you the 72-hour kit. This will keep you and one other person alive, fed, nourished, and safe for 72 hours. That's long enough for you to walk from where you are, maybe to family, maybe to the family farm, maybe to safety. It's lightweight. It's inexpensive. You can afford it, especially if you put in the code word Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S. You get another 10% off. No tax, most of the time free shipping, and 10% off. What a deal. What a deal. This is Brooks Agnew signing off of X Squared Radio. We'll see you next week right here. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.